or being coming in. And
yeah.
It's all less to do, and you got the speaker thing.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Good to go. All right. All righty. Okay. Annalise, alcoholic.
Annalise.
So grateful to be here. And I know most of you in this room, some new faces. I am really grateful to be here. Really grateful for you all. I usually just wing it, but I actually did some journaling and wrote some things down this morning. It's the first time I've ever done that when I share anything. So, my sobriety birthday is September 18th, 2017. Not my first one, but definitely the one that I have today. Super grateful for my sponsor. Also, not my first sponsor, but the, you know, sponsor that I have now, I think is exactly who I need to be my sponsor. And I don't think I would have handled it well in the beginning. I probably would have ran away. you know, it's interesting. I say that because I was reflecting on this morning and how, you know, I've grown so much, I think, especially recently, because I have that willingness to get to the real, like, taproot of the issues. And man, it is uncomfortable. But I'm very grateful, very grateful. So, what it was like. I grew up here in Benicia, born and raised. And some of you have known me since I was a little girl. It's funny because I know now that I was surrounded by people in my life, whether it's teachers, parents, friends, family members who were in AA, and I had no idea. But now I look back on it and I'm like, oh, those people always felt safe to me. Those homes, the classrooms, the whatever felt safe. And that is something special. It gives me chills, you know. It's something that, I think growing up, I had a very low self-esteem and was always chameleoning myself, shape-shifting, right, to try to fit in, always looking for this sense of belonging that I didn't really ever feel in an authentic way, really, until I came here. But that took a while. So, I was living, before I even took a drink, I was living these dual lives, you know. Mom's home was very musical and, you know, artistic, and I got to be like this, you know, it was, you know, relatively pretty safe and predictable routines and everything. And I went to dad's house and it was just kind of fair game, free for all, you know. He passed last year. So RIP dad. And I know you'd be chuckling at some of the things I say about you, but definitely was shown, you know, a lot of things and saw a lot of things that I wish that I hadn't, but it is what it is. Right. But, you know, it's interesting because I think about, you know, now being a mom, my daughter is 9 and my son's 5, and then 2 older ones in Uganda that I've taken under my wing. But candy and movies or screen time or whatever, like that was something that I was addicted to, attention, whatever I could, you know, that could kind of fill these voids. I'm the baby. I'm the only girl on both sides of my family until later on I had another girl cousin. But, my 2 older brothers, one of them you guys know, always, you know, the one kind of steering the ship for us and, You know, I remember the first drunk or the first drink that I had, actually, he slipped some tequila in my virgin margarita and thought it'd be funny, like, see what happens. I was so angry and sick and everything, right? And I can't blame that on him. I mean, we're just kids, right? But the next family party, man, it was on. I was like, let's go, right? And all the parents were drunk, so they couldn't tell that, you know, we were drinking, or maybe they didn't even care. Who knows? But yeah, first blackout, I was 11 years old. And because I saw that in my family growing up, blacking out, I thought that was normal. And so, you know, binge drink, blacking out from the time I was 11, which is crazy to think about because my daughter is almost there, and or almost 11. but yeah, you know, and so it's interesting. I think about, you know, as long as I kept the outsides looking really good, I was like this little girl who got straight A's and, you know, was blah, blah, all the things. In high school, I was really involved in leadership and sports and, you know, but it's interesting because I had my high school sweetheart who went to De La Salle and, you know, I had all these little pockets of different groups that I was a part of. And I was like, I got to be whoever I wanted. They didn't really talk to each other. They weren't really friends, right? I got the academic AP people, got my leadership squad, got the jocks and whoever. And so I'd be getting blackout drunk on the weekends, you know, and then, you know, having all these extracurriculars and straight A's and whatever. So, you know, as long as you know, people just didn't talk to each other, I, you know, stay off my back. But it was like, okay, work hard, party harder. That's what I thought. I'm like, oh yeah, and I'm fine because I compare myself to everyone else in my family or whoever, and I'm like, yeah, I'm good, you know. And so that carried me through in college, you know, again, and got a full ride and I was, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff. But man, I was getting pretty wasted and doing some crazy, questionable things. In the first AA meeting I went to, my brother had his last hurrah when he came to Santa Cruz and woo, we had some fun, but it was a little sketchy, you know, and almost fought a bouncer because he was, you know, flirting with me. He probably would have won, but I was like, no, dude, let's go somewhere else. And thankfully, he got sober. And so I came back to Benicia around that time and went to a meeting with him for him to be supportive sister, right? And and that was how it went. I was always wanting to be like that support for my family, right? And do the right thing, but never looking at my own stuff, right? So, but you know, especially my brothers, like they would come visit me in college, you know, one of them became sober, the other one not so much, but he still literally pulled me out of a bonfire because I really, when blackouts, I wanted to be in the fire, like actually was in. So, yeah, I mean, he started to see the insanity and start to be like, okay, I don't know. But, you know, so that's just how it went. And then I started traveling. I went to Uganda for the first time in college. And, whew, man, being a blackout drinker in your hometown or in a place where at least they speak the same language is one thing. But then going to a foreign country and doing that, I am grateful to be alive. And so I met who eventually became my husband and son, I mean, father of my son. And woo, thanks to that man for keeping me alive on multiple occasions, you know, but he saw the real insanity and a lot of people were just like, oh, she's studying abroad. You know, I graduated, went back and, you know, oh, she's doing such great work, man. I was getting shit face drunk, like really, really out there doing some crazy stuff. But still keeping up the facade pretty well, right? That, you know, I was doing well. And in some ways I was, and in other ways I wasn't. And so eventually made it back here. And, you know, I tried getting sober on my own. It was becoming very clear that, okay, you got some issues. The cracks started to be cracks in the facade, and people started to be like, she really okay? I don't know about this. And yeah, so you know, it took what it took, and the you know, things started crumbling. And people in my life started, I'd always been very included and like, oh, you know, come and hang out, like started to be like, oh, I don't really want you around. And so that was, yeah, and you know, but it was always like every time I tried to get sober, you know, I knew, okay, cool, these people are pretty cool. I'd come to a meeting and, you know, but it was usually for someone else's sake, right? Get this person off my back or impress this person or whatever. It was never really for me. Yeah, you know, and that's just kind of how it went. And so what happened was, yeah, once those, I had a job, and I was smoking weed on my breaks. And my boss's nephew, who, you know, I was cheating on my boyfriend with, I pissed him off. So he told her. I was so mad. Like, how dare you? But yeah, so there's a lot of mess, and that was just, that's a whole nother story. There's so much of that, right? So I got asked one morning, you know, I got to work and I got called into the office to go take a drug test. And I was like, you know, I roll my tobacco. It's just tobacco. She's like, I know, go pass your test and, you know, come back to work. And I was like, oh, shoot. At the time, I was staying in a tree house, thought I'd made it because I'd always want to live in a tree house. That was really the only friend that would, or person in my life that would take me in and wouldn't even take me in their home, which is funny. I think about it now, but I thought I had it made. But I went and drank her mom's bottle of wine and smoked probably about four spliffs and went and took my drug test with her pee. So, yeah. That was pretty incomprehensible demoralization right there. I passed it, but you guys, it was interesting. And I didn't go back to work that day. When I got home, I called my brother, and there was a lady who I'd met in the meetings and was like, "When I'm ready, I'm gonna call that woman because I know she won't take any of my BS." But I wasn't ready when I met her. It took me about a year, and so, I called up Star and I got into the work the next day. And yeah, it was rough. It was rough at first. And a lot of, you know, I ended up leaving that job and, you know, was pretty, it was homeless. I mean, couch surfing and but I stayed sober. I just like pretty much lived in the meetings. It seemed like, you know, I was just bouncing from meeting to meeting all around the bay, like trying to find, and that was when I found my new home. And so you know, that people in the program had led me to. So I'm like, okay, cool. These guys are sober, or at least allegedly. And one of them had an ankle bracelet on, and you know, it was love at first sight. He was wonderful, covered in tattoos and musician, and I was in love. And I had a dream I was supposed to have a child with him while my sponsor was on vacation. And so I did, and decided to have a child. He was 1 month sober, I was 2 months sober. Don't recommend that, but I don't regret it. You know, I have a beautiful daughter. She keeps me in line for sure. But you know, it was like as soon as I got pregnant, you know, it was just, I swear I moved around. I just kept doing all these like geographics, but I was still staying sober by a miracle. And made it back to Benicia was living with my mom, and I was just going really deep into the work. You know, I filled up like 4 journals front and back. You know, I bless this woman. She spent 2 full days, like 6, I think we calculate like 16 hours. My first fifth step, whew, man. Anyways, it was, so I was like, okay. But I treated it like school, you know. It's like, yeah, okay, do the next thing and then do the writing. And, you know, and so a year and a half into it, I'd started massage school. I had my baby and life was good. And, you know, I was living with someone in the program. I started doing work again in Uganda. But AA wasn't the center of my life anymore. It was all the things that were a result of me getting sober. You know, it's like what they say, it's like that when the life that AA gave you comes before your AA life or whatever, like that's what happened. And I had every intention when I went back to Uganda. My daughter wasn't able to come with me. She was 8 and a half months old, and so she couldn't get the yellow fever vaccine. And so I went on my own. I had meetings that I was going to go to, right? And I didn't go. And someone offered me my drug of choice, you know, and I smoked it. And, you know, that was it. And I relapsed. And when I came back, and I had an amazing time out there. A lot of it was like in ritual. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, so spiritual is my medicine. And it's like, okay, well, came back here. Was still, I had a commitment, you know, for with central office. I was doing the newsletter and I was like trying to keep it under wraps that, you know, because I know people who are like California sober, it's fine, you know. No, it wasn't for me. It really like progressed very quickly. And so thank God I didn't take a drink because that would have taken me out, I really think. But it's interesting because it drove me to a deeper hole than, I don't know, maybe because I wasn't getting blacked out, I was remembering everything. And so one night I was in the middle of the night, I forgot again what it was like to feel sober. I forgot that feeling, you know, so I'm in the middle of the night smoking out the window. And I'm thinking about, you know, how I didn't want to be here anymore. And I look at my daughter and I was like, well, that would be really shitty. And who would take care of her? But, you know, actually, she's probably better off with me. I mean, that was the insanity that it took me to. So thank God that was the night, you know, before I chose to get sober and I got myself back to what's still my home group at Karen and Russ's on Sunday morning. And yeah, and I've been sober since, and that, though, you know, was a really true testament. It's like there was no good reason for me to want to not be here. I mean, my life was looking really pretty good, but it was that insanity, and that's when I started to really delve into the book, like, in a deeper way, and not just think that, like, oh, okay, do the steps and then you graduate and move on with your life. It's like, no, no, not a good idea. Not for this alcoholic. And it says in the doctor's opinion, like any form of alcohol whatsoever. And so that can mean anything, right? And so, that was that for me. And one of the things I wanted to read, I was talking about, you know, and there is a solution. But what about the real alcoholic? May start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Talks about becoming Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, et cetera, et cetera. And that was me. That was definitely me. And you know, that, also another part was around all the methods I tried, you know, it's like, oh, maybe I should just try this or this. I mean, I did all of that, right? And so clearly that didn't work. And I'm grateful. I'm so, when people used to say like, oh, I'm a grateful alcoholic, I'm like, whatever. Like, you know, now I get it. Like, oh my gosh, I get it. I am. I'm very grateful. I'm grateful actually for all of the crazy experiences, because one, I survived them by a miracle. And now I get to carry that message and less of the mess. I can't say I'm not a mess. I still have messy parts. But that another part is like, you know, I will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Like, self-knowledge avails us nothing. That was another thing that I was like, yeah, but now I get it. It's like, oh, yeah. No, especially when I was, like, so academic. It's like, I just thought, okay, you just read the freaking book, you do the things, and then you should be good. It's like, no, this is a daily reprieve. Daily reprieve. You know, I think this part I really love around the third step, that was part for me that like it has to be a daily turning over. So like what it's like now is really, you know, especially like with my new sponsor, it's like I know that it's not just, okay, we're going to meet every couple weeks. And I used to just be like, oh yeah, I got to do my homework right before the meeting, you know, like I'm trying to pass a test or something. And it's like, no, that's not actually help. She doesn't care as much as I should care more, right? And so I started to like really, you know, I'm on the sixth step now, or sixth and seventh, right? And we're going at this like painfully slow pace. And at first I was like, oh my God, like how can we only get through like one or two of these a week? And then I started to really value it because I was like, oh, because we're literally like getting down and pulling it out to an extent that I've never done before. It's powerful. And some of the big ones I've been looking at lately are around like magical thinking and being self-critical and like being charming. I was like, oh, I thought that and it was interesting because, you know, a lot of these things, like, they kind of had a positive connotation. Like, I mean, even if you look it up in the dictionary, like, some of these things do have a positive connotation. But then if you really, but then what helps is, like, well, how does that take form in this context when you're in self-will? It's like, oh, well, I'm being manipulative. And I am, you know, like for example, is like playing God, right? I'm like, okay, so, you know, this is what I want, and God, please, you know. So the prayer is used to just be so self-centered, right? And I was like, and now I understand. I'm just starting to understand these things better, right? It's like becoming less just like kind of cliche, whatever, but. Like, oh, yeah, okay. I didn't know. It still was baffling me. Like, what? And it still does sometimes. Just like, what's God's will versus my will, right? But it's, and my brother helped me to really check in. It's like, well, what do you feel in your body? You know, it's like, oh, you know, if it's, there's that sense of urgency and I'm like, got to do it, you know, probably your will. You know, why don't you pause and take a minute, right? Meditation or doing some breathing or journaling, two-way prayers, even two-way prayers, though, I could get real caught up in self-will, which is, you know, writing a prompt, okay, God, blah, 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 here's the, you know, the question, and then free writing. But I'm like, oh, I know how to I know how to write an essay about, you know, prove my point, you know, so it's like, I'll still catch myself sometimes and be like, what are you doing here? And it's a different feeling. It's a different feeling. And so it's hard. It's tricky to tap into that, right? More recently, I would say, dealing with a lot of life on life's terms, you know, it's like it's been tough. And I was in Uganda during the pandemic. I went back there, was doing my master's. I had my daughter, wrote some amends, shared some amends with folks out there. One of them being my ex, who then I got back together with, pretty quickly became pregnant. So I was pregnant during the very beginning of COVID, had our son. Next thing you know, we got married. And yeah, so I am very grateful for Zoom and being able to stay connected. And, you know, there's other programs that I also work as well, but AA is the mothership. Like, AA is where I do the most service. And like, if I don't have this, then I don't have anything. I might as well hand you everything, because I wouldn't trust myself with my kids, with my house, with my anything, car. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, this part I really wanted to read. We established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I remember reading that, and I reread that this morning, and it hit different. It just hit really different. I remember hearing a lot of the promises, and I'm like, yeah, right. Like, there's no way that I'm ever going to not feel this, like, debilitating fear of, you know, people. And even if I make it look like I'm not, like, oh, my gosh, the social anxiety. I mean, that's why I drink a lot of the time, right? But yeah, feeling a lot. And even when I have financial insecurity, I don't have this fear of it like I used to. Because I know, like, hey, if God's gotten me through all of this, like, I'm going to get through this. Like, this is peanuts compared to what I've been through. So, yeah, so that's something that I really have to keep in mind. Yeah, and, you know, I think... this one too, I really love, you know, people talk about Rule 62 or whatever, but like having the laughter and the joy and the fun is coming back into my life. Like that, and not in this like really superficial way. Like, I love this. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. That part. Man, I can laugh today at the fact that, like, in blackouts, I thought I could fly, like almost jumped off a cliff because I thought I could fly. I didn't want to die. I wanted to fly, you know? Like, stuff like that, or, like, jumping down on the BART railings because, like, I'm not going to touch, you know, and, like, the loudspeaker being like, what are you doing? I'm like, ah! Like, that's the insanity, right? And I can talk about that today, and she's like, what? Like, I'm not the same woman, but I am, right? I am. And so, anyways, and one of the biggest things that I've been struggling with is, you know, letting go of people in my life that are no longer healthy and were taking me on that merry-go-round and one step closer to a drink, you know. Unfortunately, it happens to be my husband. You know, before I found out about some of the stuff he'd been up to in the time that we were apart, it actually was a decision that I made because I realized, you know what, he's not ready to get sober. And, it's not fair for him or for me or our family for me to stay. And it's not safe, you know, even if I'm all the way over here, it's, yeah, I wasn't safe, you know. And then I found out about some stuff and I was like, okay, really, this is not healthy. And one of the things that came up today, You know, don't deny anyone of their own pain and suffering. That is really hard. That is really hard. But that was the greatest gift that some people in my life that I resented for a long time, because I was like, how dare you let me suffer? You know, you were like me, so you should know. It's like, well, yeah, they were getting out of the way. Just kid the boys along. Ask them if they are having fun. If they are too noisy or troublesome, amiably keep out of their way. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. That came up at the Asville Seasit meeting the other day, and I was just like, oh, I need to get out of the way. You know, I need to get out of the way, whether it's a friend or a family member, whoever. Hopefully not my kids, but you never know, right? So, yeah, I think that that's the one thing I'm really struggling with now, is just like, okay, but what does that look like? I've done a lot of work on forgiveness, and what came through the other day, because I was like, oh, okay, forgiveness, check, you know, forgave my dad, he's passed, and, you know, this is like the African version of my dad, and I want to, like, you know, I want a new story, and I want to, you know, and it's like, and also, forgiveness doesn't mean that I need to then dive back into the cycle. I can forgive and I can love and I can have that love and tolerance and also remove myself from the insanity. And that is very, very hard and heartbreaking. But I feel really confident in that decision. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to rush, you know, to go sign divorce papers or whatever, but I'm going to emotionally detach. And so, like, having a separation, and not just because we're halfway across the world and all that, but for my own, you know, sanity. And so, yeah, I mean, and I've been able to stay, not just stay sober in all this, but, like, it doesn't cross my mind. And sometimes it will. I had a drinking dream last week. But it's funny, in the drinking dream, someone was pressuring me to drink gin or something like that. And I was just drinking the chaser because I was like, I don't really want to drink the alcohol. And I had a little sip and I was like it was gross. And so I woke up and I was like, whew, okay. You know, so I'll still have it. It's still there. And that's why there's a daily reprieve. I mean, it's like, it's still there. It's not like I'm going to graduate and not be an alcoholic. And I don't want to be a normie. Honestly, it sounds boring to me, but anyways. But yeah, so, one of these things that came up, that I would love to just kind of wrap up with, cause this is a wee thing, right? Like there's no way I could do this without our fellowship. So you are going to meet these new friends in your own community near you. Alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And yeah, with that, you know, I just want to say thank you. Thank you guys for loving me. I mean, some of you guys have seen me in the pits and still loved me, still welcomed me. And, you know, how can we be that for someone else? In a way that is also not getting in the way of their bottoms, because, you know, we got to hit that before we can really want to be here. So I don't know how to do that quite yet, but figuring it out. Anyways, appreciate you guys. Thank you. Oh, and this is a book. Little did I know, actually, my aunt and uncle are also in the program. So I found that out in recovery, too. So he got this. This is like the first edition book. So I wanted to add that to the shelf. So, yeah, Uncle John. So.